Well, welcome everyone to Spirit of Truth Church, Spirit of Truth Outreach, here tonight for this episode of Apology Accepted, Biblical Archaeology Part 1, The Introduction. So thank you again so much for joining us here. I'm very excited about this new sub-series within Apology Accepted, where we're essentially going to do a survey of biblical archaeology. It's going to be a lot of fun, a lot of really exciting discoveries that have been made that we'll get to share. Now, before we begin, I want to go ahead and talk about some of the primary texts we'll be using for this little mini course. The first one, and I'm going to go ahead and show this here on the screen. This is the Kindle book version of Zondervan's Handbook to Biblical Archaeology by one of my former professors, who is very near and dear to my heart, Dr. Randall Price, and Dr. Wayne House. Other books that are very useful in biblical archaeology. And I'll go ahead and show these as well. These are only in hard copy. Are the two-volume set Biblical Archaeology by David E. Graves, Volume 1 and Volume 2, as well as The Stones Cry Out, again by Randall Price, and Secrets of the Dead Sea Scrolls. So those are some of the top books on archaeology that are out right now that I highly approve of and I found very helpful in this discussion. So without further ado, let's go ahead and jump right into an introduction to biblical archaeology. So what is biblical archaeology? Why are we even studying it? What does this matter? Well, it's absolutely necessary that we do some form of biblical archaeology. Because in our understanding of hermeneutics, grammatical, historical, literal context, right? That's how we essentially study hermeneutics, or how we do hermeneutics and interpret scripture. Historical is part of that. And if we don't investigate the history and understand the history, we're lacking one key component of our Bible interpretation. And so we want to understand the Bible in its original authorial intent, in its original historical context. If we don't do that, we are at grave risk of misapplying aspects of Scripture today. And so biblical archaeology plays a key role in helping understand the historical context of Scripture. Now, the next thing I'd like to talk about is a clarification about what is a science, because archaeology is a science. Now, the problem is science in modern parlance has come to mean natural sciences, okay? Natural sciences. And so say, oh, that's not science. It's like, well, no, it is. It's just not a natural science. Unfortunately, the word got shortened and is now used for our classes and things like that. Really, they should be called natural sciences. In fact, you'll notice that there's, for example, in liberal arts schools, social sciences and natural sciences, right? You have these different divisions of science. All science is a well-tested, well-demonstrated body of agreed-upon knowledge, typically at the scholar level. If you've got that, you've got a science. In other words, this is not opinion. This is not simply a haphazard. It is a body of knowledge. It's well-tested, well-investigated, and for the most part, well-agreed upon within a given community. Then you have a science. Archaeology is absolutely a science. What is it a science of? Well, again, to quote Dr. Price, it is a modern means of revealing the lost record of the ancient world. And for the student of Scripture, the world of the Bible. Now, it's important when we jump into archaeology that we understand that archaeology is not meant to prove or disprove Scripture. Okay? It doesn't have that capability. To prove or disprove something definitively. That's not going to be found in the archaeological record. What we're hoping to do is to confirm or support the historical reality and accuracy of the Bible and to demonstrate that faith has a factual foundation. So one of the main issues, and we might talk more about this later, that's sort of plaguing modern Christianity is that in our minds, the statements in the history of Scripture seems very detached. It seems either so far long ago or it just seems foreign and far away. But it's real. These are real events talked about in Scripture. These are real occurrences that happened on this earth in geographical places that you can visit today in many cases. This is real stuff. And biblical archaeology helps make it real. Now, archaeological evidence that is known to date generally supports the historical and literal interpretation of biblical events. And for the most part, it should be expected to do this in the future. In other words, we have nothing to fear from archaeology. Archaeology has gone a long way in confirming and supporting Scripture and a historical understanding of it. However, there's a lot of pseudo-archaeology out there. This is rampant in the media. Okay? And so we have to avoid that because, again, it's all too often on both sides that people are going to overstate their case for the use of archaeology in either support or antagonistically toward Scripture. And so we need to be aware of this when utilizing the data ourselves. We also need to be aware of this when reading other people's work or watching things. Like a lot of the documentaries that come on, I mean, it's not the greatest of all scholarship often found in those, unfortunately. And you'll see why in a little bit. It has a lot to do with how archaeology is done and how long it can take to get a finding technically approved. So, what are some of the top sources for biblical archaeology? Well, I want to go ahead and show you these. Biblicalarchaeology.org, the Associates for Biblical Research, Artifacts, Near East Archaeological Society. Those are, for the most part, evangelical journal articles that are in support of using archaeology to support Scripture. The Biblical Archaeology Review does not have a biblical worldview, but it still has some good stuff in there on occasion as well. So, again, those are your trusted sources in the books that I showed you. That's where you should be going for your information in general. Those, at least the first line of defense, the first sources. And part of the reason is because in terms of archaeology, it has become flooded with liberal propaganda, like you would not believe. And I will show you some of those as well. Let's see here. Edition. All right, I may have to show them to you. I think I have them on Kindle, but essentially there's a number of books that are basically propaganda. And I'll see if I can find those later. So let's now talk about biblical archaeology. So that's a little bit of the precursor stuff. So what is archaeology? Again, it's a word about or a study of ancient history or culture and the places from which they derive. Biblical archaeology in specific is an application of the science of archaeology to the field of biblical studies. So in other words, we're studying the land and peoples of Scripture. In the 19th century, the lands of the Bible were opened to exploration and excavation. And this essentially is the birth of biblical archaeology. It's like, oh, we can finally dig and uncover artifacts in the ancient Near East area, that region. Okay, and at the same time, you have historical criticism of Scripture as challenging historicity. So it's actually kind of nice. At the same time, you have a lot of these liberal theologians challenging Scripture. You have basically new archaeologists trying to dig up stuff that's in support of the historicity of Scripture. So it was pretty cool. People were looking to find things that supported the Bible. It was a massive rush to, hey, let's prove the Bible through archaeology. Again, not that's how we do it. Professor J. Edward Wright came along and criticized many of these archaeologists and argued that their word was often misused. In other words, he was like, well, you're letting bias really creep in here and your attempt to just prove Scripture. Now, one of the main leaders in this field in that time was William Foxwell Albright, the dean, the quote, dean of American biblical archaeology. And he argued that the Dead Sea Scrolls in the Qumran community, quote, has revolutionized our understanding of the accuracy of the transmission of the Hebrew text and of the religious perspectives and practices of Jewish sects in late Second Temple Judaism. So he was a major player in terms of biblical archaeology from a maximalist perspective, and we'll get into what that is later. Now, Going into the 21st century, though, secularists really got a stranglehold on biblical archaeology. So that's the first thing you gotta understand. There was this time where it was a lot of Christians doing this. Now it's a bunch of secularists, and there's reasons for it. One of the main attacks against Israel's against Israel being a state and the Israelites being the people is secular liberal archaeology, where they essentially write works and journal articles and books actively attacking Israel and Jerusalem and the Jews. And there we I've read many of these from scholars and things like that. It was quite disparaging. So this began to create a rift, unfortunately, of archaeologists, and that was sad. Okay, because and religious people, because religious people began to abandon it because it was being used against them. You know, and so there's this sharp divide then between biblical studies and archaeology in the 21st century. So. Again, talking about this propaganda piece, what's one aspect of this? Well, the term Palestine, okay? So Palestine, if you ever heard of Palestine, this is often what's the Middle East or the Israel area is called, and it says, well, it belongs to the Palestinians, not the Jewish people, but the Palestinians. It's Palestine. Okay, well, here's the truth about the word Palestine. First, it was never used in the Bible for the place the ancient Hebrews settled. They never understood that as Palestine. Okay. Words that were used were Eretz Israel, or the land of Israel, or the land of Canaan. You know, Canaanites were there. But it was never Palestine. There were no Palestinians. Palestinians don't exist in that history, that part of history. There is no such thing. The word comes from Peleshet, which means Philistia or Philistine. Okay, that's where it comes from. It's sort of well, you'll see where it comes from here in a second. Today, Israel, the West Bank, that includes biblical Judea and Samaria, the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan, Lebanon, and parts of Syria, are all, quote, Palestine, or all part of this Kingdom of Israel. Now, when did this first appear? Well, Palestine first appears in Greek literature in the 5th century BC. Now, I'll go ahead and read you a nice quote here. The classical use of the term Palestine came from Roman sources as a result of the Emperor Hadrian changing the Roman name for the land of Israel, which is Judea and Galilee, to Palestina, and the name of Jerusalem to Aelia Capitolina in AD 135. And this was done to minimize Jewish identification with the land of Israel as a punitive measure against the Jews who staged the second Jewish revolt. And so he took the name of an ancient enemy of the Israelites and applied it to their land to erase the name of Israel from history, end quote. And so essentially what you've got here is it was just an attack on the Jewish people for their revolt. That's all it was. Eusebius also used it in compliance with Constantine's anti-Jewish policy. And again, it's classical uses from Roman AD 135, with the express purpose of erasing the name of Israel from history. And it fell out of use, actually, until the modern era and the British Mandate from 1920 to 1948. And then the Arab people never even used it until the Palestine Liberation, PLO, came about. And then Arabs used the Palestinian name. So Palestinian is a politically charged term, and has now been accepted as a designation for those who consider themselves under, quote, occupation. But I don't refer to that region as the Palestinian region. That is a name that actually is essentially propaganda. It is the land of Israel. It's the land of Canaan, if you're talking about ancient pre-Abraham. You know, if you're talking about that kind of situation, you're talking about pre-Exodus. It's the land of Canaan. But it's Palestine is a made-up name. Again, it has no actual bearing. There is no such thing as Palestinians unless people want to recognize themselves now as such. But there is no historical root to this at all. So biblical archaeology today. 21st century is the aim to enshrine archaeology as real science and to use it to discredit the historical claims of the Bible. So now, unfortunately, like I said, people are trying to really use it to discredit Scripture by demonstrating typically the absence of supportive data or even contradictory data. So what people are trying to do now is the main attack is absence. In other words, they're saying, oh, well, this should be here, but we didn't find anything, therefore the Bible's wrong. The problem is you cannot do archaeology and make claims. I mean, they do all the time, but you really can't actually make claims based on the lack of something. We'll see why in a bit, because archaeology is a fraction of 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 what used to exist. So you can't make a claim based off nothing. Some, however, though, will try to spin data against Scripture, and they will sometimes use false interpretations of Scripture to do this, or they will, you know, put Scripture in a false in a false framework in order to make this happen, or even just misread or you know, on purpose, just misread data just to make their point. I mean, I've seen all of these things happen or jump to wild speculation. So again, people typically try to deny the flood. They try to deny the Hebrew enslavement in Egypt. They try to deny the conquest of Canaan, say it's all fiction. You know, however, you have people like John Oswalt saying the biblical worldview provides the basis for genuine history writing. That's what I argue. I argue that the best history book we have is scripture. That should be the gold standard for history books, period and story. So let's talk now about the two main groups of people who are archaeologists. So you have the minimalists and the maximalists. Now, biblical minimalists are people who minimize the biblical data in deference to the archaeological data. So they don't prioritize the Bible. The Bible's essentially a interesting fictional account, but it's fictional. It doesn't guide their archaeology in any way, shape, or form, and certainly most of them are out trying to disprove it. Again, there's generally an attempt to read no evidence as evidence against scripture, and Bible's just religious story, it's not history. On the flip side, biblical maximalists are those who maximize or prioritize the biblical data with reference to the archaeological data. Okay, so again, absence of evidence is not necessarily evidence of absence. Archaeological data should speak for itself before combining with literary data, but literary texts must be considered, like scripture, and given priority as a more complete record if the archaeological data is to tell its story in the full context of history. In other words, you're trying to do biblical archaeology without the Bible, and it doesn't work. You need the Bible as the frame in order to understand the pieces. So, limitations of archaeology. So what are they? Well, the first thing to understand about archaeology is that it's extremely fragmentary. So given a culture in a given period of time, say they produce, you know, 1,000 pots or something like that, only a fraction of those pots are going to get left behind and stay intact. And only a fraction of those are ever going to be in an area that we will excavate. And only a fraction of that field that we're going to excavate actually gets excavated. So only a fraction of those pots even ever gets found. And then once they're found, only a fraction of those ever gets essentially investigated. And then only a fraction of that stuff that's investigated ever gets truly reported. And only a fraction of it ever gets reported is actually ever published. So, essentially, archaeology is very fragmentary. And there's way more work to be done than there is people or funds. And that really is ultimately what it is. It's there's not enough people and there's not enough funding to really push archaeology forward as it could. And then remember, stuff's getting destroyed left, right, and center. When ISIS ran through that entire area, they destroyed so many things. It was a travesty how much we lost in that ISIS situation. Again, cultural and natural, historical, and present issues have eroded the archaeological record. It's very fragmentary, and it's common to wait 15 to 40 years for findings to be published. 15 to 40. You could discover something now, and it's not until, I mean, you know, I'm 38, I think, right now, something like that. And I mean, imagine if I discovered something now and I had to wait till I'm 78 to see it published. It's happened for some major things. But, you know, war zones, financial costs, permits, and then there's always the desire to draw premature conclusions as well. And that's another problem. So there's a lot of issues with archaeology in general and limitations. So what about the Bible? Well, the Bible is not just a literary document. It's also an archaeological document. In other words, we had to dig up manuscripts. So the Bible is both literary and archaeological. And so what's the value of archaeology for biblical studies? Well, one, archaeology itself is a text in some sense that needs to be interpreted. And so by, for example, in terms of the Bible, by discovering new manuscripts and things, we're able to better and better understand the original text of Scripture. Again, technically, there should be no conflict between correctly interpreted archaeology and correctly interpreted biblical text, given my evangelical holdings. And again, the failure of a model is not the failure of a source. That's also important to understand. So if I have a bad model and get bad and a bad conclusion, that's my fault. That's not the archaeology nor the Bible's fault. So what is the methodology for using archaeology in biblical teaching? Well, both the biblical data and archaeology need interpretation. So we have to recognize first the need for integrating biblical texts and archaeological data. In other words, as archaeology presents itself, it's helpful to utilize these together, especially in our preaching. developing a new understanding of the way archaeology works, identifying the ways archaeological data might influence the understanding of the biblical text, constructing a biblical archaeological exegesis. In other words, again, grammatical, historical, so it's both the words and the history, and then teach the resulting exegesis. In other words, preach it. So that's essentially how you do it. So what contributions have come about in terms of contributions to archaeology, of archaeology to biblical studies? Well, first, it's confirmed the word of the Bible. Okay. Again, the Bible can't be proved, but archaeology can, quote, bring historical confirmation to the historical statements in the text of Scripture. And this can assist the believer in forming a realistic and rational relationship with God. It can correct our wording of the Bible. So in other words, we can get better manuscripts. It can help us understand hapax legomena, or unique words in Scripture. So in other words, sometimes there's a word that might only be used once or maybe twice in Scripture, and we can see, well, how is that word used in nearby regions and nearby time frames? And that can help us understand what the word means. Clarifying the world of the Bible. I mean, you have things like the Rosetta Stone, which is the key to Egyptian hieroglyphics, which was pivotal for understanding Egypt's role in a lot of this stuff in the biblical narrative. And then it also complements the witness of Scripture. It complements or supplements the historical, cultural, and religious information. So you might ask yourselves, well, why is this such and such the way it is in Scripture? And oh, here we go. There's an answer. So what is an archaeological site? Well, an archaeological site is a tell or a mound. And what you have to do is, it's got several layers of habitation that you're going to have to dig through that are deposited through destruction, sometimes city upon city upon city, literally. And a potsherd or a sherd is a piece of ancient pottery. That's the most common type of archaeological find, is just pieces of pottery. So when you excavate it, you can look at the stratigraphy. It's the identification, interpretation of layers or strata of a tell. So you're going to try to understand, well, from which era of history did this layer come from? And you typically do this through the trench method, which is you basically dig a strip straight down through multiple layers, and then you use pottery or you use rocks or use other things to help you identify which era these things are from. Okay? So the trench method is used. There's an open area method where you kind of are looking at things in a large area. One of the key components of this is something known as Lyell's Law of Superposition, states that natural processes deposit layers in sequence, so that soils deposited earlier will be older than later soils deposited on top of them. And then you have the Wheeler-Kenyon method of a grid style of excavation, which is going to hopefully let you get a good representation of the whole site. Still not everything, but at least a good representation. So again, you're going to be documenting things pretty heavily, and you're going to try to date things. And I would argue some of the best dating methods are actually relative dating. In other words, you're establishing which layers correspond to which ages, and then you're looking at which layers did you find the artifacts in. Okay, that's relative dating. Absolute dating is, or chronometric dating, is more of your carbon dating. But even carbon dating has some issues as well in terms of, you know, carbon being added to the thing or not. And so relative dating is actually, I would argue, a better tool, although absolute dating can also be useful. And remember, pottery is a great diagnostic tool because pottery changes its look in every age. All right. And finally, we're going to go ahead and wrap up with the archaeological periods in biblical history. So we're just going to go briefly through what these are. So you typically start out in the Stone Age. This is where you're going to see stone come in as a dominant form and use, a used material in the things of that time. Next, you'll proceed to the Bronze Age, which is a new layer or order of social complexity. You see the development of urban civilizations, foundation of city-states, pseudo-writing systems, education, religion, and architecture form. It's from about 3500 BC to 1200 BC. And it's essentially a result of the Aegean people's invasion into Eastern Mediterranean. Now, the Iron Age is where you get unified nationalities. You're seeing smaller kingdom states based on national identity, centered around a common god. You're seeing the spread of metalworking at this time. Then you have the Babylonian period from about 578 to 538 BC. This is the period between the fall of the southern kingdom of Judah and the rise of the Persian province of Yehud. And you have the Persian period from 539 to 330 BC. You have the rise of the Archimedean Empire and the defeat of the Neo-Babylonian Empire in 539 by Cyrus the Great. And then you have the Hellenistic period, the Greeks. Early Hellenistic, 330 to 323. It's conquest of Alexander the Great and defeat of the Persian Empire. And late Hellenistic, 323 to 149, Hellenization of the region through the division of Alexander's kingdom. From there, we move on to the Hasmonean period, the time of the rule in Israel, the Maccabean or Hasmonean dynasty that occupied the office of both priest and king. And then finally, the Roman period from 149 to 638 AD, 149 BC. 638 AD. The early Roman period from 149 to 135, this is the destruction of Carthage in the Third Punic War. Middle Roman period, 135 to 200 AD. This is the Mishnak period. The late Roman period, 200 to 300, is the Talmudic period and the Roman adoption of Christianity. And the Byzantine period from 330 to 368 is the Byzantine Christian rule of the Holy Land until the Muslim invasion. So those are just the general periods that we're going to be looking through as we continue our adventure through biblical archaeology. And with that, I'm going to go check and see if there are any questions. I do not see any. So I hope you all have a wonderful evening. Thank you so much for joining us here at Spirit of Truth Church, and I look forward to digging into more biblical archaeology with you next time. Have a great night.